The Afternoon Show with Christian Arcan and Andy Hart starts now on WEEI.
Hey, how are you? Welcome in. WEEI Afternoons. Christian Arcan, Andy Hart. Nice to have you with us here today on this Thursday, the 24th of October. As we get a week away from Halloween, Andy Hart. How about that?
You're a big Halloween guy?
Not really, no.
No, I don't really care.
I have a two-year-old. I got the little kid, so I got to dress him up as something, but I'm probably not going to be doing all that much.
Are you one of those modern parents that brings the Yeti with you that may or may not have alcoholic...
That's like a modern thing? I'm pretty sure my folks were doing that back in the 80s.
Really? Was I that naive?
Probably, yes.
I don't think my parents even went out with me. It was like, go out and come back, like...
Well, yeah, maybe. That could be true, too.
They were just home drinking.
Yeah, that's the idea. If I am going out, that's probably the way I'm doing it.
You got the wagon with you?
Uh-huh, sure. Yeah, we live in a hilly area over in Dedham, so it's a lot of up and down. You know, I'm probably going to be winded halfway through it, ready to just go home and call it a night. Two-year-old, he doesn't care, so, you know, whatever. Anyways, we'll get to more Halloween-related material as we get closer to the day. Right now, though, we are opening up here with what we heard from Adam Schefter yesterday. That clip really made the rounds online. A lot of people reacting to it and reacting to the way Schefter sort of phrased all those things. Acclimation coming for a lot of these coaches. A lot more responsibility than maybe they were expecting. A lot more to the job than they were perhaps prepared for. And I hear those things, and I was reading the responses to it. It shouldn't really be landing that much, I think, with Gerard Mayo that way. This isn't someone who had no idea he was going to be a head coach this year. It's not like Joe Mazzulla, for example, who was coming into the season as an assistant coach and then was told, hey, this thing happened, and now you have to be the head coach. Now go out there and be the head coach. That's sort of like when Schefter was describing what he was describing sounded more to me like something Joe Mazzulla would have gone through. Not so much Gerard Mayo, who 5 years ago was ordained by the Pope, Robert Kraft, there to become the next head coach, and you knew that that was going to be the case, even though they were winning a Super Bowl at that time, and he hadn't had any experience yet, and had never really even been a defensive coordinator or anything else. We've gone through all this. We know all this. It just seems to me that it's given him a break, isn't it? It's given Gerard Mayo a bit of a break there. Well, you know, there's no way. You got to acclimate to all this stuff. And it's like there's plenty of first-year head coaches that get in there and they don't have this magnitude of problems and lose the locker room in 7 days. Like, this is 7 days, 7 weeks, but you know what I mean. Like, that doesn't happen like this with every rookie head coach. Most of them, in fact, I feel like, even when they have a bad team, don't wind up this far underwater in this short amount of time. Like, this all seems pretty unique. And I know that we're spoiled here in New England and we had 20 years of championships or whatever. Fine. I think even for a median NFL team, you know, someone right in the middle, a team even down at the bottom where you are who has a new head coach, there's a few of them out there. He's not having that kind of trouble over in Atlanta and he's got more experience, but still, you know what I mean? Like, there's a lot of examples of that. And I just think that's, I understand what Schefter's saying, but it does sort of take the onus off of Gerard Mayo, which I'm not sure he deserves yet. I'm not sure he's earned that.
I think it's a bad look for Gerard Mayo because forget the 5 years ago. A year ago, they put it in the contract that he was the coach in waiting.
Right.
So at that point, shouldn't you really be getting your ducks in order? And this is a good example and a bad example that I'm going to throw out. But remember we heard all the stories about Josh McDaniels prepping for the next time?
Right.
Now, it was a disaster in Oakland, Las Vegas, so the prep didn't help him. But there was, I got binders and books and plans, and that year I was in St. Louis, we stunk so bad, I basically spent the whole year just planning for what to learn from everybody around me. And Gerard Mayo had that year. He was watching Bill, and it's not like he took over a team that was cruising.
Right.
He took over a borderline dysfunctional team and organization from Bill Belichick. So he was watching what wasn't working, watching what was wrong with the team, and it's almost like he learned nothing, he prepared nothing, because everything has a little bit of a feel like fly by the seat of my pants, and when it doesn't work, I'll just clarify it the next day and try something different. And this goes back even to the offseason. And that's why I don't know if the Schefter comment felt like to me, it wasn't about the coaches realizing how hard it is to be a coach. It was the Krafts realizing how much the head coach controls. That's how I took that comment a little bit more. Like, the Krafts are getting their eyes open to, wow, we had a guy that kind of kept a lot of things under wraps and controlled for 2 decades. Beyond the winning and beyond all the obvious stuff, he kept everything in line. He was in full control. Now we had no idea it could go this sideways this fast. Because I do think, you bring it up, like, I think this is unprecedentedly bad. Unprecedentedly bad with all the issues, because the one thing I will continue to push back on that everybody keeps saying, oh, a win is all we need. No, a win is not going to solve all that ails you.
Right.
All that, the trade requests, the unhappy target requests, the social media issues, the legal issues. I thought one that was alarming this week was Dietrich Wise, captain Dietrich Wise, right?
Yep.
He was asked if he was offended by him, he and the rest of the team being called soft. You know what he said? No, I didn't even hear it.
I don't even know what you're talking about.
Now, I think he's
someone
lying.
Someone called me soft?
I think he's probably lying.
Of course he's lying. Everybody knows about that.
But Gerard
he
Mayo.
He said it into a microphone after the game.
And Gerard Mayo tells us before he talks, when I talk into this microphone, I'm not really talking to you guys or the fans. I'm talking to my team.
Right.
So this is a player who's a leader coming out in the media and saying, I wasn't listening. I don't listen when he talks at the microphone. BS or not, it's a dumb thing to say. And it's just another layer of, who are the leaders on this team? Why has it gone so far south? Is it all on Gerard Mayo? Is it all on the roster construction? Did they just bring KJ Osborne? Perfect example.
Mm-hmm.
You brought him in as a veteran receiver. So I got to think at least part of that is, we got a bunch of young receivers. We probably need a veteran who's been around the league for a little bit. Did you not vet him properly? Because he seems like a terrible fit. He seems like an I guy, that he's all for like, he expected to get away from Justin Jefferson, and maybe it was his time to get catches and targets, which is bad for him. But making that worse is when Alex Van Pelt goes to the podium and says, the guy that everybody should follow and look up to is KJ Osborne.
He's the one who's doing it right.
The guy who asked for a trade yesterday?
Who said it was an alley-oop when they mentioned that.
What the hell are we doing? It's like one mistake in the media and on social media and verbal is worse than the previous.
Yeah.
They don't fix it. They don't make it better. They actually exacerbate the problem that they've created. And culture. We were told culture was going to be what Gerard Mayo controlled. Culture club. This is going to be the coolest culture in the world.
Mm-hmm.
This is the worst culture I've ever seen around a football team.
It's pretty bad. It's a pretty bad culture right now. I don't think there's any getting around that. It's on display, and it's on display pretty much every day with a new player, generally a wide receiver, saying something that you just look at and go, holy moly, who are these guys? What is happening with this team? We understand that the wide receiver position is one that comes with certain personality quirks.
Yes.
That's generally with the guys who are good. You know, like the diva wide receivers tend to be the ones who are in the Pro Bowl or All Pro or, I don't know, 1,000-yard guys or someone who's not Kayshon Booty and Pop Douglas and KJ Osborne and the rest of these guys who just cannot stop running their mouths about how they're being underutilized and they're so good and this team doesn't know how to use them. It's like, guys, this is preposterous what we're hearing. In from a culture perspective, I completely agree with you. I also have a theory. I have a theory on why these wide receivers are just so far out to lunch that I'll get to in just a minute. But before we get to that, has Mayo lost the team? Is it week 7? Has he lost the team?
I think so. I think it's, I mean, how could you not interpret it as that? Because
it's not just the wide receiver. That Dietrich Wise is a defensive captain.
Oh, everybody. Yeah. Everybody. Like, I don't know who is on board with Mayo right now. And you have, for expert opinions, those are also against Mayo, whether it's Bill Belichick. Okay, he's got an axe to grind. So let's take Bill Belichick out of it. How about J.J. Watt, who says, I hope he knows what he's doing because I've never been on a team where it would be good to call him soft.
Right.
I don't think they would react well. I don't know who Mayo's guys should have been. I don't know who they are. I don't know that he has anybody. I think he's becoming more internalized because I think it's hard to maintain your energy and everything you brought to the table when you're just failing miserably at every turn of the corner. So, no, I absolutely think he lost the team. It's why I don't think Evan Lazar was that far off, and I know it didn't sit well within that
Evan Lazar has got, I mean, listen, if I was him, I'd be shaking my ass all over that place right now.
I wouldn't. I still work there.
I know. Seriously. I mean, come on. What? Oh, you wanted to scrub me? You wanted to scrub my take off the internet? Who looks right now? Who looks like they had that thing nailed? Evan Lazar does. So, I mean, you're right. He does work there, but still. I mean, that's a pretty big victory for him, I would say.
I'd have some of my followers maybe take the victory lap for me.
Sure. Yeah.
Don't do it myself.
Get the Russian bot farm going, you know?
Yes, like, absolutely.
Yeah, wow, what a great point by Evan Lazar. Comrade Lazar with another great point. That's fair to say. I mean, listen, it seems like a team that has tuned out their coach. It doesn't seem like a coach who really had much of a message to begin with. And really, if you go back to the Belichick days, there weren't a lot of Bill guys left on the roster either. There's only a couple.
Right.
I'd only consider like two or three guys on the defense. And really, that's it to be Bill guys, right? Like, you know, Godshaw is a Bill guy. Bentley's a Bill guy. I'd call Duggar a Bill guy.
John Jones.
John Jones, Bill guy, sure. But that's basically
probably
it.
Wise.
And these aren't, you know.
You might be able to come up with eight to ten Bill guys, because I would put David Andrews in that class.
Okay, Andrews, that's a good one on offense, sure. But there's not a lot, and we're not talking about Pro Bowlers here. We're talking about guys who were just on the team and happened to be around Bill and sort of fit his mold of what he likes in a player. And I think that over time, that became something that he wanted, like in drafts, you know, he'd target certain guys. He'd go for certain guys and he'd avoid other types of guys.
Yep.
And that evolved over time, as we've all learned through, you know, various documentaries and such. But either way, like, you're now Jerod Mayo. You don't have anything. You don't have any guys. Like, there's no one in there who's really sticking up for you. And I know that they said, oh, yeah, he's a good motivator, and we all want to play hard for him, and Coach Mayo, this, he's great. They undermine him so often. It's just, it's tough to watch at this point. Like, it's really, they don't have any, when they start talking, they have no semblance of saying, you know, how is this going to reflect on my coach? How is this going to make the, is he going to react? Is he going to punish me for this? Is this going to make him look bad? They have no fear of him, and they're not worried about, like, insulting him, basically, because that's kind of what this is. It's kind of insulting.
Yeah, and I don't think they care, most of them.
Yeah.
He is on their pay no mind list. Like, it's about themselves. But you said it's hard to watch. I think it's hard to watch if you're a Patriots fan or you're a Jerod Mayo believer or you wanted it to work, you want it still to work. I think there's an other side of that that is enjoying every minute of it, led by Bill Belichick and others.
You think he's enjoying this?
Absolutely. Matt, well, maybe. You know what? It may not be led by Bill Belichick. Mike Lombardi might be actually enjoying it more than Bill. He just comes off that way.
Kind of wild. Like, in this latest one, it's Belichick talking, and he's already kind of attacking the Patriots. And then he's got, like, the devil on one shoulder, that's Lombardi, and the angel, which is somehow Matt Patricia, on the other shoulder, who's like, yeah, the bike's just there for working out. And Lombardi's like, no, it isn't. It's because they're soft. Everybody gets a bike ride. Blah, 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 blah. He's a devil. How much of an a-hole do you have to make Matt Patricia be the voice of reason on the other shoulder?
Oh, he's all
quite, that is quite a feat there by Mike Lombardi.
And I also, I don't know if you thought this, part of me watching Patricia kind of be, as you, the good cop, the nice guy, the lighter, made me wonder, because I know the Krafts liked him. Do you think he goes, huh, this is going so poorly. Is there any chance I should keep my fingers clean in this, and maybe they'll call me in a month, a year, 2 months, whatever?
He's very loyal to Bill. Patricia is. We know that.
Yeah, but
would he get another job back in the NFL? No one else is calling him, right? He had that thing with Philly last year, and then that was it.
If Robert called
him, the street right now.
You don't think he would listen? You don't think he would answer?
I think he would.
Yeah, I do too.
I think that'd be a mistake to call him and start bringing Bill's old guys back, though. I think that'd be a horrible mistake.
But I think it's become clear. We talked about that Robert has ties to people. Like, that's how he hires. Some sort of threat.
How's that working out for him?
Right now, about as bad as you could possibly have ever. Nobody could have expected this. I firmly believe the most negative person, whoever you believe that is, Mike Lombardi, Bill Belichick, Andy Gresh, whoever was most negative about the Belichick-Mayo swap out, I don't even think that person could have seen this negativity. Because I still say, if they were 0-7, that's not the issue. It's everything that's going on. As you say, every day something pops up. They even didn't get much bump because Alex Van Pelt today said, we had a good meeting this morning, good team meeting. And the wide receiver room should probably keep that internal or whatever he said, right? Like, it didn't even feel harsh.
Look inward.
Yeah, look inward. Like, there was no.
It's very zen, you know.
But there was no energy to it.
No.
I didn't even think it really resonated or mattered. Can you imagine that same thing if, I don't know, Dan Campbell was saying it or Bill Belichick? Bill wouldn't yell it. Bill wouldn't be all hot and bothered like Dan Campbell on 17 cups of coffee.
Mm-hmm.
But Bill would say it in a way that was like, ooh, I just got a shiver down my spine.
Right.
Alex Van Pelt.
Also,
like,
heads would have rolled by now. Would have rolled if this was happening under the previous regime. And I don't know if that's necessarily a good or a bad thing when it comes to this roster, because as bad as they are, you start cutting your players that are making plays and replacing them with what, practice squad guys? Off the street? I mean, you could do that,
would.
I suppose.
What are we going to do, lose? We're already losing. We already suck.
Is that good for Drake May, though?
We're already slotted to pick number one overall.
Is that how you
want to
start his development off with a bunch of practice squad guys?
He's doing it with no help as it is.
Okay, so is that a good thing or a bad thing, I guess? I mean, that's sort of the point.
What doesn't kill you makes you stronger. You ever hear about that?
Sure. Tell that to Mac Jones. 617-779-7937. There's your phone number. What's the next step here? What's the next step for Jerod Mayo? I think that's a question that really doesn't have an answer right now. I don't know how you fix this. I don't know how you go about it. I think that Van Pelt today was trying to sort of get back on the track of, hey, Drake May is right on track, you know, like he's developing just how we want him to.
Well, he's feeding you. There was you a lot said more. It was just May.
Hey, listen, that's what a lot of people said. I think that was a theme of this season. It wasn't just me.
We were wrong.
Well, listen, I mean, Drake May is developing pretty well, and they should be latching onto that. They should be gripping him with all their might. You know, this is our guy. Look what we did. Look at this quarterback that we're bringing along. Isn't that what this year was all about?
Yes.
If I'm Jerod Mayo and Alex Van Pelt, I am screaming that from the mountaintops. And he kind of was. Also, Van Pelt was like, hey, you know, not for nothing, but the pass protection was a little bit better last week. True. You know, you can point to some things.
Sure.
It wasn't great, but it was better. And this is with the offensive line that's new every week. So I think that, you know, the little tiny victories that you can pick up here, they should be latching on to and avoiding the whole record and the run defense and all the rest of this. But you can only avoid that for so long, especially when everybody else is popping off. They're getting really screwed over by the way this offense is going. Like, hey, man, you know, if I was somewhere else, KJ Osborne, I'd have 500 yards by now. Like, what are you talking about?
You
shouldn't even be on the field, really. I mean, KJ Osborne is a guy who's lucky to be hanging on an NFL roster.
100%.
He was
non-existent in the summer. Like, he never popped, never looked like, oh, there's a guy that they might get something out of. He was non-existent. The other guy, Booty, who has popped on the field, but you have 10 career catches. 10 career catches, and you're bitching about targets and getting the ball? Like, who are you? Get to the Kobe thing. Do I know you?
I shouldn't have to ask for the ball, Kayshawn Booty says. They should just know. Throw it to Booty. Like, what?
What? You shouldn't ask for the ball.
What are you talking about?
Because you're Kayshawn Booty, sixth round pick with 10 career catches. You should STFU. I would have handed out t-shirts. STFU. Like, everybody in this team, put this t-shirt on, wear it, and live it. We don't need to hear you. Whatever you think about anything, no one wants to know. We are not freedom of speech. Really bothered me when Jerod Mayo said that the other day. I don't know if you caught that in one of the press conferences. Might have been with Greg Hill. Said, oh, that's their freedom of speech. That's not how freedom of speech works. Hmm. The government can't tell them not to talk.
Right.
You can tell them to shut the up. Mm-hmm. Right?
That's and as it used to be run a little. It was like communist China back in the day for 25 years. I mean, that's the way they did it. Your freedom of speech didn't matter.
Absolutely. You know? And it shouldn't.
Not
that's football.
Exactly.
Hell, that's employment. Right?
I'll tell you who
bosses tell you to shut up.
Right. And I'll tell you who this has been great for. The Patriots writers, because, boy, every single one of these guys ready to give them a story every single day.
Oh,
they walk
so easy.
In, here's some Mass Live. Hey, Kayshawn Booty, got anything to say? Yeah, sure. Here's an exclusive to Mass Live. Let me tell you, I think I shouldn't even have to ask for the ball. They should just know to pass it to me. Oh, this is good stuff here. KJ Osborne, you got any comment? Oh, I got a comment. Everybody's got comments, and it's been great media-wise, but, man, for Jerod Mayo and Van Pelt, really that entire locker room, this thing is as bad as I've seen.
And how about May? I give him great credit. It started with us on Monday. He's talking about leadership and being more of a leader. And he talked Wednesday about, I got to bring juice. I'm the quarterback. That's part. This is not fair to him. He should not have to deal with all these jackals in the wide receiver room. And on one level, I know Alex Van Pelt's right. If you're a quarterback, any level, high school, Pop Warner, you've had a receiver that's bitching for the ball,
mm-hmm.
right? But this is different. This is everybody, while he's behind a not good offensive line.
Yep.
It's better, but that doesn't mean it's good.
No.
Listen to the Chase Daniel breakdown. He had plenty of complaints about the laughingstock offensive line in front of his boy, Drake May. And Drake May has to worry about a line. He has to worry about play calls because the play calls are questionable at best. He has to worry about wide receivers. So this whole thing like, oh, we'll put him in when it's perfect for him to go in. Could it be any worse? Could there be a worse time to be a rookie quarterback in the NFL? It's hard to find a worse situation. He has no talent. I laughed. People no longer call these twos and threes.
He has no talent around him.
That's what I mean.
He has
talent. He has great talent.
He's talented,
he has no talent around him. People have stopped calling these wide receiver twos and wide receiver threes. They've just labeled them all wide receiver fours, which might be disrespectful to Pop Douglas. Probably the only guy that I'd want to bump up.
Sure.
Maybe to a
some
three.
Of them, maybe four is a little high. You know,
oh, absolutely.
Being honest here, yeah.
Some of them should be out of the league. They're like UFL wide receiver twos, and they get the spring league. You'll be playing in the spring. But this whole narrative that he was going to be played, Drake May, when it was ready for him, when he was ready, but also it was ready for him, It's never been less ready for a rookie quarterback. He's never, almost no rookie quarterback has faced a greater uphill challenge, which that's the one thing, if you're a Patriot fan, you should get excited about. What happens when he doesn't have bad coaching, a bad line, and jackals around him at the receiver position and maybe some guys that can make plays? Can you imagine what he'd do?
Sure.
The ingredients suck.
Or if that ever happens, that may never happen. You know?
That's a negative view.
Well, listen, I mean, this is their first shot at it, and they didn't get any of it.
It can't
get worse than
this.
They didn't get the coach. They didn't get the coordinator. They didn't get the line. They didn't get the receiver. They didn't get anything.
But
this is their first crack at it. I don't know that that's true. I don't know that it couldn't get worse. I really
don't. How do you think it could get worse?
They go out there and they draft another. But I mean, they could just keep repeating these same mistakes.
So it could stay the same.
Yeah,
I don't think they could give him worse line and wide receiver talent.
But it gets worse as each year goes by, and you're wasting this kid's potential, and you're wasting his rookie contract. And he wants to get the hell out of here. Yeah, exactly.
That's the worst long-term scenario. But for the next couple of years, I think just by law of averages and luck, you accidentally might give him better talent, better offensive linemen, better coaching. Just pure luck. Because you blew all of it so poorly this year. Can you really? It's like when they say, like, if you lose a parlay, every leg of it, it's kind of the same of winning every leg of it. Like, it's equally as hard to do.
Mm-hmm.
I think it would be really hard for them to suck any more than they've sucked this year.
I'd agree. It's been really, really tough. It's been a mess so far, and really this hasn't been helping at all. I have a theory as to why these wide receivers are all behaving this way. It's a little bit out there, but I think there may be something to it, which we'll get to right after Jackson tells you what's trending.
Now, here's what's trending on WEEI.
Trending brought to you by FindMassMoney.gov. The Bruins and Celtics return to action tonight. The Bees host the Dallas Stars. Puck drop at the TD Garden begins at 7 o'clock tonight. And you can hear Andrew Raycroft from Jones and Keefe this morning telling you how great he thinks Swayman has been playing.
It was awesome, especially the game in Utah. Could have been, you know, that could have easily been a no-point night and a 3-4 nothing loss. You know, you talk about him and the holdout, of course, the storyline and worrying about his start. And he's been the exact opposite and proven why they wanted to get him signed and they want him on an 8-year deal.
Celtics are in Washington to play the Wizards tonight. That game tips off at 7 o'clock. And the Patriots, they did practice today, and we will find out who was on the injury report and how it looked from Tom E. Curran at 3:30 on the WEI Afternoon Show. Week 8 in the NFL begins with a Thursday night football matchup between the Minnesota Vikings and Los Angeles Rams. Kickoff is at 8:15. You can catch the call of the game right here on 93.7 WEEI. Westwood One's coverage will begin at 7:30. I am Jackson. That is what's trending on WEI and WEI.com. Find Mass Money wants to help you enjoy the football season by helping you find money you didn't know you had. You can have unclaimed money from a forgotten savings account, uncashed payroll checks, or a refund check that never got to you. Go to findmassmoney.gov today. It only takes 30 seconds to search your name.
This is Afternoons with Arcand and Hart on WEEI. On WEEI.
Alex Van Pelt today. Media availability. I thought he did okay, considering, you know, all things considered. I thought he answered his questions in a reasonable way. I didn't think that was a terrible answer. The KJ Osborne one we'll get to in a minute.
Yeah.
But I thought that one there about sort of looking inward and it's time for everybody to kind of grow up here, I thought that was all true. And, you know, if people are frustrated, we're 1-6, we're losing. This is when these things sort of happen. Stock answers, I'd say, but
yes.
What do you expect him to say? You know, like, what's he going to say?
But can I ask a question?
He didn't make it worse.
So I have no idea what's going on, but in Carolina where it's 1-6, is this happening? Like, all of this crap happening? And I don't know the answer. I'm not saying it isn't or is. I have no idea.
They benched their quarterback, their second-year, first overall pick quarterback, like 4 weeks into the season. So I'd say it's not going great there.
But is everybody bitching about it on social media, asking for trade? Like, I'm talking about
no
the
idea.
Crap.
I really don't know.
I mean, I don't care about the on-field.
Mm-hmm.
I continue to say the on-field, to me, is irrelevant. I expected them to suck. I could assess the roster in May, June, and July. You're not talented. You weren't going to win games. That is not the issue. The issue is everything that's going on around the team, in the locker room, with supposed leaders and veterans and players and social media. That is the absolute poop show that is going to get somebody fired. I don't think anyone would ever even talk about Jerod Mayo being fired for the record. Everybody expected the record, maybe
right.
except him, because he promised more wins. But
sure. I mean, it's also not so much the record, but how they're losing some of these games. Like, they're getting their ass handed to them. Like,
sure.
It's not just, oh, they came up short this week. It's they shouldn't be on the field. They're getting embarrassed out there. And
okay.
That's something that's
So you do think on field is a factor in the firing
To an extent,
talk.
Yes. To an extent.
I think it's zero. I think it's 100% about he can't do a press conference without backtracking. He is saying dumb stuff. He has no leadership value. The team is a mess. The leaders are a mess. The social media is a mess. I think it's all that crap, and I haven't. Now, Cleveland's
If they were losing all these games the way they lost that Seattle game, for example, like a close one-score game, if that's what you saw these last couple of weeks, even with all the walking back and all the guys bitching and moaning and all that, I still think it would be a little less harsh than it is right now.
Yeah, but they,
I don't think that it would be turned up this much talking about him losing his job. I just don't think we'd be there.
Yeah, I think this is all about all the other stuff. Because then maybe we could actually fixate on your two-point conversion that you hated. Maybe we could have done...
I did not care for that two-point conversion.
But if all this other stuff wasn't happening, if the culture wasn't a mess and all this, maybe we would have been picking apart. And maybe he'd be getting the other question, which popped up this week. Taylor Kyles, sneaky aggressive.
Mm.
Hey, coach, you going to start coaching at any point on the sideline?
Have you given any thought to coaching the team at some point this season?
I was like, I didn't have on my bingo card Taylor Kyles coming off the top rope with a Macho Man elbow onto Gerard Mayo coming. But
super fly Jimmy Snuka up there.
That stuff is getting sort of overwhelmed by Osborne and Booty and all this other stuff. And so I just, like, Tennessee, they're 1-5. Is this all happening in Tennessee? Their quarterback stinks, too.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's similar to Carolina. You have a new coach. Your quarterback stinks. You might have football issues. Are we selling? We're trading DeAndre Hopkins. All these other... Actually, it did kind of happen there, because what's-his-name was popping off. Your boy, Ridley.
Ridley was
popping
off.
That was like 2 weeks
that's
ago.
That's true. He was. Seem like it's going great there. I don't think it's going great with any of these bad teams. Any team that's one win, two wins, I think they're all sort of going through it to different degrees. I think it's probably worse here. But I have a theory about this. I have a theory about why these wide receivers are behaving this way and how this all went down. And it didn't occur to me. If you didn't hear it, by the way, Kayshon Booty told Mass Live, he said, "I get frustrated when I'm not getting thrown the ball, knowing that I've caught every ball that's thrown to me. So I just feel like I'd always go to the sideline and demand the ball. So whether it's the deep ball, I asked for that. Texans game, I asked for that. So now I feel like I shouldn't really have to ask." Okay, Kayshon, you got it, buddy. 10 career receptions in 2 years, whatever it is. KJ Osborne asked if he was wanted to trade, said, "Oh, that's an alley-oop," basically, saying, "Sure, I'd like a trade." Pop Douglas at points this year said he wasn't getting the ball enough. Who else am I missing? There was another one. Was it Thornton? Thornton said something?
Thornton had one,
yeah.
And even... the Osborne mismessage usage preparation thing.
Right. Okay. So all
There's
of that's going on.
There's a lot of layers
on.
To it.
There's a lot of layers to this, and here's what I think happened. And it didn't occur to me until I saw that, and it took a while to really even compute, KJ Osborne's Instagram post. Because whether or not that guy's his agent, that's someone who has some influence in his life enough mm-hmm. that he would post a text exchange with him, and you know, maybe he didn't negotiate his deal or whatever, but he's a guy in his inner circle. And just, if you missed it, this is what that post said. It was a message from his friend or agent or something, and it reads as follows. "Being proud of you is an understatement. From being told you would be inactive Wednesday and only taking 3 reps all week in practice, to being told you're activated at 11 on a Saturday night, facepalm emoji, and going in the game at another position across the world in London, you held your composure and did what a pro does. You're a true pro, K. I love you with my all, K. Never change who you are. You are truly special. God always got to stay down and keep working. I'm with you while we figure out the situation and every other. No matter, you can count on me till the end." Now, I read that, and obviously he's part of KJ Osborne's inner circle, so he's trying to big him up. But I started thinking about all of these guys and their agents. And what do you think the agents said to them coming into this season? They said, "You know what? You got a rookie quarterback here, or at some point he's going to be coming in, but it's really either going to be him or Jacoby Brissett, someone who's going to be able to give you the ball, we think, and you're the best receiver in this room. Look around. You're better than all these guys. Jalen Polk's agent, you're better than all these guys. You're a second-round pick. These guys are all 6th-round picks. Kendrick Bourne was undrafted. These guys are nothing compared to you. You're the man. You're the one who should be out there getting all the balls. You're the one who should be getting all the targets. You're the one who should be getting all the touchdowns and the yards and blah, 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 and everything else." And they all believed it. Because they probably looked around and thought the same thing. Like, yeah, you're right. These guys all do suck. I am good compared to these guys. I could be the man in this wide receiver room. How come I'm not? How come I'm not getting the ball? Why isn't this going the way I thought it would? I thought that I was going to stand out from these guys. I know I'm better than this guy. I know I'm better than that guy. If they would just throw me the ball, then I could show them. I'll be the best wide receiver on this team. Blah, 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 blah. They all were told that, I think. I think that was something that got said to each and every one of them some way or another through their agent or maybe through a wide receivers coach or something. I don't know. Mm-hmm. And they all believed it. And now it's not happening for any of them. They're all sort of putting up these measly, crappy numbers, which, by the way, no wide receivers have put up good numbers here in 3 years now. And they're all pissed off. And on some level, I think, you know, you can't buy into your own crap all that much. But on another level, I think these guys should be looking around the rest of that room and thinking, I'm better than these guys. I should be getting the ball more. That's not like when Van Pelt today was saying it's good that they all want the ball. I kind of agreed with that part of it. They shouldn't be acting like this, but they're young, kind of immature guys, and this is just how they're expressing themselves. It's not good, but on some level, I can kind of relate to that idea. They should stop. They should stop and just worry about winning games and catching passes, and Jalen Polk's instance in particular. I mean, to worry about catching the ball here before you pop off anymore. But don't you think that's probably what was said to them? Don't you think that's probably how this was all presented this year? Like, you could be the man this year if you just, you know, go out there and play, and none of them can get the ball. I mean, that's really what it is.
Absolutely. And that's what I was saying yesterday about the lack of any elite talent creates a void, and people think, oh, I can fill that void. Absolutely. The issue for me, though, is I'm with Alex Van Pelt. They should all be disappointed. Mm-hmm. They should all think they're better than they're performing, and they should all want more catches and opportunities. And we're struggling. I'm the one who can take us out of the struggles.
Right.
Not publicly. I'd actually be, you know, this is going to sound weird. I'd actually be okay if we got whispers that the receivers are all kind of complaining behind the scenes that they want more targets. Isn't that how it always works?
Sure.
Like somebody hears it because they're saying it to their teammate. They're saying it to their agent. They're mm-hmm. saying it to their mom, whoever. These guys are all saying it publicly or doing it on social media.
Yeah.
That's my issue. I think that's the issue with Jerod Mayo. And you said it earlier. They don't fear. They don't respect. Whatever that lacking aspect of that relationship is absolutely missing because receivers want the ball. And when there aren't good players, you know, to some degree, it's no different than Ridley. He's paid like a number one. I need the damn ball. Sure. I'm not getting targets. They all have reasons to believe they should be getting
Steph
targets.
Steph Diggs was getting 150 targets a year, and he was still pitching that he wanted more
right.
on that Buffalo team, yeah.
But the one in Buffalo was like, it was weird. And he's Steph Diggs. Then I even have to accept, well, he has been our number one receiver for three
right.
years now, whatever. These guys, if I heard stories about this, unnamed sources, behind the scenes, blah, 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 that's one thing. Why are they so comfortable and emboldened to just do it publicly all the time? That's the question.
Good question. 617-779-7937. Ryan's in Boston. Go ahead, Ryan.
What's up, guys? Hey, I'm not going to pretend to be a master of the English language. I swing a hammer all day, but this is not exactly what a mutiny is. I mean, talking out of turn, all this. You know, the old regime, in some ways, you're both married, so just hold on to this one for a second. Belichick was like the ultimate Dutch oven. He just encapsulated all the crap that everybody just fought it out.
Gross.
And you didn't hear anything out. Nothing ever seeped out of Gillette because you had him. Now you get rid of him, you see what's going on.
Yeah, sort of. Stuff got out. Stuff got out while he was there. He put stuff out there. You know, like the Brady.
I think he just really wanted to say Dutch oven.
I think
on
he
the
did.
Air.
He did, and that was okay use of Dutch oven.
It.
I guess.
I mean, it makes sense, but I think that's really what he was aiming for.
It was his objective.
That was probably
say Dutch
was
oven,
there,
and for us to accept it.
He would put stuff out there. Brady's people would put stuff out there. The Gronkowski's would put stuff out there. Like people got their message out.
And
there
if you weren't on
to.
That level, you were gone.
Yeah, and also these last 3 years, it was going on all the time. Mac Jones and Jacoby Myers and Kendrick Bourne, everybody was coming out and saying whatever they wanted, pretty much all the time with little consequence. I know Bourne got benched a bit, and eventually Matt got benched too. But those guys, I mean, listen, you didn't lose anything from that, and the team was a crap show anyway, which is something that gets forgotten here when Bill Belichick and his merry band of Patriots haters on the podcast over there at Underdog start talking. They had a lot to say on the latest episode, and you'd almost forget that they were a 4-win team last year with all these guys. Well, not all of them, but certainly with Bill at the head of the thing. We'll get to that. The latest Bill's revenge tour, and is this actually helping him when it comes to future prospects for a job? We'll get to all that next.
We're right back to it. Afternoons with Arcand and Hart on WEEI.
WEEI Afternoons, Christian Arcand, Andy Hart. Nice to have you with us here today. We're going to be joined by Tommy Curran in about 45 minutes. Looking forward to hearing what he has to say today as the world turns over there in Foxborough. And I'll tell you who's got their eye on that. That would be Bill Belichick, Mike Lombardi, and Matt Patricia, fellas over there at the Underdog Podcast Company. Well, I guess Underdog's fantasy sports, but they do content for them over there with their podcast. And as you could probably tell, Belichick's already been doing a bit of a victory lap. I know people have taken issue with that term. I don't know how else you – what else do you call it? When he's coming up there saying, yeah, you know, last year this team was really good against the run, and now they suck. Huh, weird, isn't it? All the same players, all the same guys calling them soft. I don't think they're soft. I think they're pretty tough. And last year when I was the coach, they were awesome. So I don't know what's going on with these guys. It's a victory, lad. There's no other way to say it. And Mike Lombardi has been – really, I mean, you talk about a good guard dog. He's been right there. He has been barking right at everybody and getting this this narrative out there, this Belichick propaganda. And he was there. He was there for this latest go-round of swats at the Gerard Mayo pinata. Let's take a listen to what Bill Belichick, Matt Patricia, and Mike Lombardi had to say on the Underdog Podcast.
It's Jets week, but boy, the Patriots got a lot of questions to answer between the head coach and the atmosphere and, you know, who's soft and who's not soft and so forth.
When you ride bicycles in the locker room, I mean, I don't know how you could pretend you're not soft. I mean, everybody gets a bicycle ride. I mean, isn't that what they're there for, right?
Probably to warm up, but I know what you're saying there.
All right, just stop it right there for a second, please. That's what I was talking about earlier. Here's Bill, and he's already, hey, you got a lot of questions to answer. You got a lot of questions with the head coach and who's soft and who's not soft. Gross, by the way. And also, you know, all this other stuff, the atmosphere and everything else. And then, boom, here comes Lombardi, the little devil on the shoulder. He's like, well, everybody gets a bike ride, right? Oh, you're not soft. You're soft. You made it soft. And then here's Patricia. The angel on the other shoulder. I think it's just to warm up you guys. They're like, yeah, shut up, Matt. Shut up, dork. You don't know what it is. You know what's going on here. They're soft. They're a bunch of – there's a new age crap is going on here. That's what it is. And maybe you're right. Maybe you're onto something there about Patricia, but I thought that was interesting.
He's looking not to burn a bridge.
Lombardi has just been so over the top with this stuff. He's making Matt Patricia seem like a very thoughtful – Matt Patricia, by the way, who is stood up straight, respect the process, and, oh, by the way, I made the greatest play in the history of the Super Bowl. That Matt Patricia is looking like this very thoughtful, reasonable guy.
Well, among those two.
Compared to the other two. Yeah, it's unbelievable.
And we also need to remember, Lombardi, I do think, has a personal axe to grind because he was brought to New England when he was still being paid by Cleveland at the time, right?
Yep.
Yeah. And then as soon as the Cleveland contract ran out, the Crafts wanted no part of keeping him around, weren't going to pay him, so he was run out of town. So I think there's a little bit of a personal thing there. I just, the Bill part, with, you know, they got a lot of questions, the coach, and it's like, wow, you're just coming off the top, you're leading with the coach. Like, he's basically saying, could Gerard Mayo be fired? And that was mine added. What do they write in writing? It says, like, emphasis mine or whatever. Like, I think he's
evil
chuckling.
Evil laugh mine,
yeah.
Yes.
He's chuckling that 7 games into Gerard Mayo's career, his career is on the ropes. He's on the hot seat. And I think Bill is loving that. I honestly think he's loving that. And because there's no other reason for you to bring that up immediately. Because Adam Schefter tried to kind of not laugh it off, but say, that would still be kind of crazy, blah, mm-hmm. blah, blah. Like, Bill is leading with it.
Yep.
His lead thing, a lot of questions. Head coach, hey, everybody notice? I wasn't so bad. Even when I was bad, I was better than this guy. Even when I was dysfunctional, I was a debacle. It wasn't this much of a debacle.
No, but it was still
that
a
was Bill. Did you hear
it?
Bill?
It was still. That's a pretty good weasel laugh right there, like in the Happy Gilmore.
Oh, yeah.
You know, a little weasel laugh. I would say that you want to take your victory lap, fine. I do think that this is all very. It's all very convenient that none of them really point out the fact that this team was awful last year. I mean, this team was garbage last year. Was the run defense a little better? Sure. You got it, Bill. The run defense was better, all the way to 4 wins. And actually, Lombardi, and they talked about this in the midday show, I heard a little bit, Lombardi even mentioned the offensive line being a problem last year. If we could keep playing this, it goes on a little more. Go ahead, Jackson.
Probably to warm up, but I know what you're saying there, Mike.
Shut up, Patricia.
What I saw, it's a kinder, gentler program. I'm not sure that we can you can do that, especially when you have such a young team And their offensive line has really struggled all year. They've struggled to pass protect. That was a problem going into the season. It was a problem last year.
Problem last year. Wait a minute. There's no problems last year. Last year, everything was great. Last year, everybody was just cruising around, winning games, you know, going to the conference. Oh, wait a minute. No, you were a four-win team and ended up picking third in the draft last year. You were a joke last year. The Patriots last year were embarrassing. They were an embarrassing team. They may be more embarrassing now.
Oh, yeah.
But let's not act like that was something worth keeping going last year. I mean, come on. You ripped a Band-Aid off, and there's a lot more blood started coming out. I'll put it to you that way. Maybe they were you were covering up some things there that Belichick was glossing over with his, I don't know, with his reputation and sort of the idea that if you cross him, this is going to happen. By the way, did that stop Jack Jones from going through the airport with a bunch of guns? Did that stop J.C. Jackson for whatever thing he got in trouble with? That guy was handpicked by Bill to come back here. Mm. Guys were defying him left and right. This wasn't like people really have this great sense of revisionist history when it comes to these last few years of the Bill Belichick era. They were not good. They were not smooth. It wasn't like he ran this tight ship. It was an embarrassing mess, and he was getting undermined all over the place, too. I think that went into his firing. I do. I think that had something to do with it.
You think Bill was mad about that, that Lombardi said? The offensive line sucked last year, too, basically.
I mean,
listen, Mike, this is not what we're here to do right now. We're talking about Mayo. We're ripping Mayo and the current Patriots. You want to stay on this podcast, you will shut your mouth over there.
Yeah, now, maybe it was used as sort
stick
of
to a jokes, buddy.
Veiled shot at Elliot Wolf. Like, hey, it was bad last year, and you didn't make it any better. Well, yeah, I mean, who left it to you in this state that it's in?
Maybe that was an attempt, but you know, there was a stray. There was a little shrapnel that hit Bill on the way out the door in this one, and we were bullying Mayo. We were bullying the current team. Let's stay away from my legacy.
Yeah, Lombardi's going to be in like a little cage next time.
No, he's going to do a Mayo. He'll have to come out on like some other podcast or on his social media and kind of backtrack. I didn't mean to imply that Bill Belichick's offensive line was also
a mess. It was great. Yeah, the offensive line, and they won 14 games, and it was the best thing ever, and I can't believe they fired him. Okay, Mike, 617-779-7937 is your phone number. We're talking with Tom E. Kern here in about 30 minutes, but when we come back, we're going to check in with your Boston Bruins, who are in action tonight and who have not been looking great lately. That's coming up next.